Meeting of the Energy Committee to order. Would anybody offer a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Purcell. Moves approval of the minutes. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Minutes are adopted. We'll be making a slight change to the schedule. We'll be starting off with Representative Knuth, Bill House File 689. We do have a quorum present.
Mr. Chair, I know we laid this bill over, and I don't know if we have a quorum.
We did have enough people in. Yep. Representative Reinert and Representative Johnson have been in. So I believe we have a quorum present.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure if I need to move the bill or if we laid it over or what the appropriate motion is at this point.
I believe, Representative Knuth, it would be in order to move the bill again.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 689 be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register, and then I have an amendment.
Representative Knuth, would you like to move the amendment at this time?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would move the DE2 amendment. Members, we had a lot of testimony on this bill during our last meeting, so I was hoping we wouldn't have to do that, go through that again. We reworded this amendment. We took out home since the program does not apply to the energy assistance design. The assistance programs do not apply to homes, so it just says buildings. And it says they have to consider strategic planting of trees and shrubs as one of the energy conservation strategies in this design assistance program. And I appreciate Representative Kalin's help with this, and XO Energy was involved with getting this wording right, and I've also spoken with the Minnesota Landscaping Association, and everyone seems to be agreed on this amendment, and so I would like to move the DE2 amendment.
Representative moves approval of the DE2 amendment. All those in favor? Any discussion to the amendment? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion is adopted. Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Is there further discussion to the bill? Representative Knuth.
Mr. Chair, I think we thoroughly discussed this in the last committee. I'd stand for questions, but otherwise I think we have many other important bills on the agenda that we'd like to get to today.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Knuth, what's your definition of around buildings? And what does it pertain to? Is it for commercial, industrial, or is it for residential? It doesn't say.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, if you look in this statute in this Sustainable Building 2030, it does not refer to homes, and that's why we took the homes out, so it would refer to buildings that are qualified for the design assistance program under the statute.
Mr. Eloff, do you have some comments, Doctor?
Yes, Mr. Chair. In response to Representative Anderson's question, Subdivision 9 relates to new and substantially reconstructed commercial, industrial, and institutional buildings.
Further questions or comments, Representative Knuth?
Anyone? I would just ask for member support.
Anybody from the audience wish to testify? Seeing no further questions. Representative Knuth, would you like to renew your motion?
I'd like to renew my motion that House File 689 as be recommended to pass as amended and sent to the General Register.
Representative Knuth renews her motion. Further discussion? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? the motion prevails and the bill is re-referred to the General Register. Okay. Representative Hornstein. Representative Hornstein, welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And I don't know if we have the proper motion for whoever would want to make it would be to send this to the Commerce Committee.
Sure. So, the chair moves House File 1250 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Commerce. So we have the bill before us. And do you have an amendment to the bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, the A5 amendment is the amendment that will get the bill in the shape I would like it in and the shape that a number of other people would like it in as well. And I'll explain that in a minute.
Sure. The chair moves the adoption of the A5 amendment. Any discussion to the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is adopted. Motion prevails and the motion amendment is adopted. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. House File 1250 is a bill that looks out into the future, anticipating a lot more widespread adoption of fully electric vehicles, and we're talking about electric vehicles that go beyond our current neighborhood electric vehicles. Mr. Chair and members, I got this idea when I learned about a company called Better Place and several other companies that are similar to it out of the Silicon Valley. And the idea here is that we have had, I think, a couple of barriers to more widespread adoption to electric vehicles. This has been primarily the lack of infrastructure to support them. Charging stations and outlets in primarily throughout the commercial and residential sector for people to easily charge their vehicles. And the second has been the expense of the battery, which often drives up the cost. And the idea behind Better Place and other electric car infrastructure companies is that they would actually be the ones that would be able to rent or lease the battery to the consumer. A car that would be properly fitted for such a battery then could be easily exchanged and charged. The consumer could then subscribe as they would for a cell phone manufacturer, Representative Johnson, and have different plans based on mileage and other concerns, and be able to easily recharge their battery. And that could take a significant amount off the price tag. But what really sold me on this is that Renault and Nissan have completely bought into this concept and plan on mass producing electric vehicles to fit this kind of infrastructure alignment potentially by 2012. And this company, Better Place, is looking at several countries and states that have really looked at their model, have liked it, and have developed public policies to support it, and public-private partnerships. Those include Israel, Denmark, the east coast of Australia, the state of Hawaii, and the region around the Bay Area. So this is moving forward, and again, the company I referenced earlier, you have a New York Times piece that Tom Friedman wrote about them. They've also been featured as well in the Washington Post, a big story yesterday about them and on ABC TV. So I think we have finally have a real plan to get into the more widespread adoption of electric vehicles. And the final point I'll make is that at the Detroit Auto Show about a month ago, you had several companies led by Ford who are now looking at, again, producing electric vehicles on a much larger scale. The infrastructure we're talking about could also support plug-ins, hybrid vehicles, and the Chevy Volt will make it onto the scene next year. And the reason to do this? Quite simple. Reducing our dependence on oil and reducing the greenhouse gas emissions from the transportation sector, which
end up being about 25% of the total greenhouse gas emissions in the state of Minnesota. Finally, in terms of the amendment, we've had, of course, the public process once the bill is introduced. You know, one gets all kinds of feedback and suggestions, and we had a couple that have been incorporated into this amendment, very valid concerns that I think were brought forward, and we're addressing those concerns. Gary Faden, I want to publicly thank from the Mechanical Contractors Association and the some of the definitions of the building code sections. And Burl Haar, the Executive Secretary of the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission, helped to clarify, again, some definitions related to a public utility under this bill. So we're heading to Commerce, and I'll commit to you, Mr. Chair, and the committee that if there's some additional concerns raised between now and then, we'll do our best to address them. Thank you very much. I'd be happy to stand for questions. I also have one testifier, Ethan Frawley from Fresh Energy.
Sure. Representative Gunter, did you have a question?
Chairman, Representative Hornstein, I have an electric golf cart. I got a license plate on it. It can go about 8 miles before it runs out of electricity. How far will these things go now today with today's technology?
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair and Representative Gunther. This is precisely why we need to build out this infrastructure. Currently, if you were driving, let's say, between here and this is Martin County, you know, you may be able to get, difficult to say, but, you know, not very far, let's put it that way. And so we want to be able to, you know, have a system where you could stop off. You could, first of all, have your battery charged fully. If you run out, there would be a charging station somewhere between here and Martin County. But more importantly, we're going beyond this electric cart, the golf cart technology. Renault-Nissan is planning to have a crossover-type car, you know, an SUV type of crossover, as well as, you know, a smaller sedan. And so this kind of effort is taking the electric vehicle much further along than we've ever seen it before. And then we're really looking at the and analyzing why electric vehicles didn't happen in the 90s, which, again, we had some technology issues there, too. But we're really on the cusp of something pretty important. And this bill will put Minnesota on the map. It'll simply say Minnesota is open for business when it comes to electric car infrastructure.
Representative Gunther, and I'd like to remind members to please speak into the microphones, too.
Okay. Representative Hornstein, I'm looking forward to having electric cars that will drive me 155 miles so I can go back home without having a charge. Is it possible that we could take all the rest stops and put a meter on them and an electric car can pull up and feed the meter and get charged up? I think that was, there's a lot of rest stops on the way home.
Representative Hornstein?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Gunther, that is actually an excellent idea, and that might be kind of the next step in terms of what the state can do. I'll talk a little with MnDOT about that, and you know, maybe it's not too late to even incorporate something like that into this bill. But the reason I like that idea so much, Mr. Chair and Representative Gunther, is that we have a lot of public infrastructure in the state, and let's try to make that public infrastructure as electric car friendly as we can.
Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hornstein, the bill seems to be establishing a standard, the 40 amp 240-volt. What degree of confidence do we have that that's going to be an industry standard and that that will accommodate anything that's coming, pardon the expression, down the pike?
Up into the 14.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hilty. This language we ran through industry officials as well as you know, building contractors and the mechanical contractors, and no one had a concern about it. That does seem to be what's needed in order to charge the, again, this new generation of electric vehicles that seems to be coming down the pike.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hilty.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Representative Hornstein, do you know what the requirements were for the EV1?
No, I don't offhand. I don't know the answer to that question. I'm sorry, Representative Hilty. But certainly, it's a good question. I should know that one.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Hornstein, do you have a fiscal note for this bill?
Representative Hornstein?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, no. We don't anticipate state costs to this bill. There is no fiscal note. I don't know if Mr. Eloff has any comments on that.
Mr. Eloff, do you have any comments? Or to the House fiscal staff, too, if they have comments.
Mr. Chairman and members, there is a fiscal note that's been requested. I think it was on the original bill, and I think it was amended in transportation. There will be an amendment going on here, and so it isn't completed yet. But for the, there are two agencies, both PUC and Commerce, that were on the fiscal note. They did not have any cost, but I imagine if there's going to be a cost, it'll probably be administration, I would think, with state parking ramps, if there is any at all. But I don't know that to be the case.
Representative Anderson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Hornstein, who's going to pay for this? It looks like you're asking the EQB to set up rules and regulations. I would think that would be something, but you're asking them to circumvent the environment or to not have to do an environmental study on this thing. So you're kind of circumventing that here. And then you're asking us to put this in place. Who are you asking to pay for it?
Representative Hornstein?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I believe the A5 amendment was meant to take care of that. I know that we were doing this late in the process, so I hope it's worded correctly to delete that section, Representative Anderson, so rulemaking is not a part of this bill. But we, again, outside of the small potential, and I would say potential small costs incurred by a couple of state agencies that Mr. Soderberg mentioned, we don't anticipate fiscal costs. This is primarily meant to, again, we're looking at the private sector. We're looking at the automobile manufacturers. We're looking at automobile infrastructure providers, and we're seeing what role can the state play that's relatively or almost entirely revenue neutral to encourage this industry, not only in Minnesota, but send a message also to Detroit and other places where they produce cars that, again, our state's ready and willing to adopt and make the necessary public sector policies to encourage this industry.
Representative Nornes, or I'm sorry, Representative Anderson, please finish with your question.
Mr. Hornstein, Representative Hornstein, you didn't answer the question, why are you allowing the EQB to circumvent the EIF?
Representative Hornstein?
Well, again, Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, that's no longer in the bill, but
that means there's a cost.
Representative Hornstein?
This relates to Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson. You know, there's a process of environmental review. For example, a proposed impact would have to go through an environmental impact statement process and hearing, which would be a cost incurred by a local unit of government, a state government, the proposer of the facility, or in this case electric vehicle infrastructure that would need to go through environmental review. There's currently no environmental review required for this. The original language, which is stricken from the bill now, would have said we're not going to require environmental review for this anyway. So I just want to emphasize that there would be no cost in this bill incurred for environmental review of any kind. And as a matter of fact, you know, we're saying this is probably a process that wouldn't need it to begin with. But again, that's not in the bill currently, and there would be no cost either to adding it or deleting it.
Representative Nornes, do you have a question?
Yes, Mr. Chair, just I guess two maybe. Representative Hornstein, I'm not that familiar with the electric vehicles, so can you? What would be the average recharge time if you're pulling in, say, to a service station? How long do you have to be there connected? And then the other, I guess, question related to that is, who will establish what the charge? There'll have to be a charge, I'm assuming, to do that. So, Is that going to be up to the individual business, or who's going to set that market price?
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and Representative Nornes. To your first question, it's my understanding, again, from conversations with Better Place and other people developing this industry, that one could do a battery exchange in either an existing service station or a completely electrified station of some kind, you know, in less than 5 minutes. That's what their model envisions. That's what they are piloting in these countries where that I mentioned, and states and regions. In terms of the amount of time it would take in a traditional, you know, situation where you're plugging in or charging, I think we're talking about several hours. I'm particularly excited about the potential of off-peak overnight charging to make our existing plants more efficient, as well as the use of renewable energy in the charging process. So, but that technology, I think, is still being developed by Renault and Nissan. But we're not talking about, in the battery exchange, a large amount of time, and in the amount of time it would take to top off at a charging stop, I think we're talking about several hours, not days.
Representative Beard, did you have a question?
Yeah, perhaps, Mr. Chair, mine can wait until after the testifier speaks, so I'd be happy to hold for a moment.
Representative Atkins.
And, Mr. Chair, I'll wait until after the testimony as well.
Well, welcome to the committee. Is it Mr. Ethan Foley?
Yes. Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Ethan Foley. I am the Transportation Coordinator at Fresh Energy. Fresh Energy is a statewide member organization that supports a transition to a clean energy system. Fresh Energy supports this bill and asks the committee to support this bill, and I'll be very brief in the reasons why. First, Representative Hornstein mentioned the impact on the energy and global warming side. Another very important piece is the impact in just in air pollution in general. The PCA did a study 2 years ago looking at the impact of plug-in hybrid electric vehicles on air pollution, and they showed that fairly across the board reductions as we move towards plug-in electric vehicles and eventually fully electric vehicles, and especially as we move towards wind, solar, other sources of clean renewable energy to provide the energy for our electric vehicles. But even with the current mix of energy, electric vehicles are much cleaner than our standard combustion engines. And so that's one reason to support this. Another reason is that 29% of the energy in the state is used in the transportation sector. So moving towards electric vehicles allows us to utilize the amazing resources we have right in our backyard in Minnesota of wind, solar, and other renewable sources to provide the energy to power our cars. That's an amazing opportunity. And we've talked a little bit about how the auto industry and other folks are moving towards the technology to really support this. That transition is moving forward. The private sector is moving forward in this, and this bill provides an amazing opportunity to support that transition to electric vehicles. It'll help us move towards a cleaner energy system for our kids and the next generation. So with all those reasons, I'd ask you to support the bill. I'm available for questions. We also have Aaron Stone-Rocculo from our clean energy program here to answer any energy-related questions as well. Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Foley? Representative Gunther.
Thank you. Mr. Foley, optimally, in the next 10 years, how many of these electric cars do you hope materialize in the state of Minnesota?
Mr. Foley?
I think that there's a great potential, and it depends on a number of factors, including the level that the public sector supports private sector investments in this. So we put in policies to help support that transition, and I don't see any reason that it couldn't number in the thousands or more.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you. I also hope there's tens of thousands. And I don't know how many kilowatts of power they take per charge and how many miles are projected to go, But I look at this as eventually becoming a major consumer of electricity. And I think for global warming and reducing carbon dioxide would be a great thing. Do we have enough power sources for the potential I think they have?
Yeah, Representative Gunther, one of the important pieces with electric cars, too, is moving forward, there is the opportunity to charge in off-peak periods of the day so that when we're at home at night, we pull into the garage and we plug in, and when the system demand isn't there, our electric car is charging. It's a phenomenal opportunity to help integrate our clean renewable sources. You know, the wind is blowing more at night. It helps integrate to have these cars pulling right from in at night when the otherwise the load is less.
Any further questions for Mr. Foley? Representative Beard?
Mr. Chair, there's several, and I'm not sure if it's a rhetorical question, but I'm trying to synchronize this proposed bill with the conservation plan that we've passed here the last couple of years that pretty much demands that the electric companies reduce their consumption by 1.5 points a year, I think it is, and yet we're proposing to move these load centers over onto the system, and I'm just wondering if we've thought through how that's going to work, or are we proposing amending the conservation plan or somehow synthesizing it maybe with petroleum fuels now here all of a sudden. I don't know if there's an answer to that, but I just want you to know that I think about these things when we throw bills like this up here. And I do have another question for Representative Hornstein, perhaps, if I can move on to that now.
Sure. Representative Beard.
Thank you. I'm looking on page 3.9. You very specifically spelled out an amperage and a voltage. You forgot the hertz. And I guess I'm being facetious, Representative Hornstein, and why we're putting into statute exactly what must be provided, because it's assumed 60 hertz is what we have, and I think it will be assumed that, although I think I understand your bill actually doesn't say you actually have to pull the wire and put the breaker in the panel, you just have to provide the causeway, if I'm reading it correctly, but what happens if in the next 2 or 3 years there's another revolutionary change in the way batteries are charged and the technology advances? I have a hunch it's going to. I just read a dissertation on a 10-second charge capable battery here yesterday. But is it necessary to actually spell out the size of the breaker and the size of the wire you got to put in the wall?
Representative Hornstein?
Mr. Representative Beard, good question, and your first point was actually very well taken as well, and I would just echo you know, Mr. Foley's statements regarding off-peak generation, and certainly one that I think has resonated with me. I've learned a lot more about efficiency at nighttime. But to your point, I think it's important to be somewhat prescriptive about the amperage and this kind of language, just because it again, it sends a signal, Mr. Chair and Representative Beard, to the industry that we're thinking through these issues, that we have some specific ideas in mind, and if it does have to be updated based on technological change, I think it can easily be done. But this now seems to be the standard that we've heard from the industry, and I think it's important to elucidate that in the bill.
Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'm glad you're thinking out. I'm glad I could raise it and help. And just to be clear, the advance in technology and the way the market changes, you know, I'm a big believer in the dynamics of the marketplace, and I have a great faith in the ability of companies to perceive and divine what it is we want and what actually makes sense. Some of that's driven by constraints that are just happening around us. And so I'm glad this is happening. You know, a couple years ago we had the electric golf carts. We ran it through transportation policy to actually encourage cities to create ordinances that would allow people to drive these vehicles within their communities on streets under 30 miles an hour and so on and so forth. It's working well. We're starting to take baby steps. We're starting to learn how to work that in the system. But some of this, I just wonder if we're getting a little too ahead of ourselves in our enthusiasm, and those are issues that are concerned. There's another one I'm thinking of. And that's it right now. I keep hearing the word peak and off-peak. I have a hunch that if there are 300,000 or 400,000 automobiles being plugged in after we go to bed at night, all of a sudden there will be no off-peak. There'll be, in fact, it may be a peak time, which, of course, when it comes to wind, and you know how I love to chide my friends about the wind and how it's doing, I will say, to be fair, the quality and the sustainability of the wind after sundown is better. So we do have the ability to actually put wind to good use here and turn it into a transportation fuel. Just so you know, we think about these things. There's a peak time coming when it'll be off peak will become peak, and I want you to know we think about that. Last question, Mr. Chairman, has to do with line 2.12. We're defining a hybrid vehicle, and we're talking about the ability to travel 20 miles powered substantially by electricity. Is that in the summer or the winter? And I'm having a hunch that it's going to run a lot shorter in the winter if we have to run things like the defroster and headlights because it's dark 14 hours a day and things like that. You know, just so you know, I'm thinking about it.
Representative Hornstein.
Well, a couple of responses, and this harkens back to some conversations I had with Better Place when I first found out about them. And I happened to read the Israeli press quite often, and that's how I learned about it when they kind of made their big splash in January, and then when they started moving into to Denmark, Australia, the United States. Then some lights went off, and I thought, wow, this is maybe something we ought to pursue in Minnesota. The very first question, Mr. Chair and Representative Beard, I asked them was, can this work in a cold climate? Because that's the obvious one, and, obviously we're a lot colder than Denmark, but they were pretty confident, and, they're in Denmark, and they've made an investment, and I think that, you know, their venture capital is going there. And so I can only go on what I've been told, but I think that, again, our advances in technology, it isn't the same as your father or mother's electric car. But there are a couple of other things I wanted to respond to and from Representative Beard's earlier comments that are really, I think, important to underscore. And this is primarily a private sector initiative. And I asked them, What does it take? What are the criteria you use when you determine where you're going to expand? And I think this is probably the answer that any of these emerging companies would give. You know, first and foremost, they have partnerships with utilities. In Denmark, they are their primary, partnership is with the Danish oil and gas utility and an electric utility. In Australia, they work with the largest investment bank. In Israel, basically, their utilities and oil companies actually have been primary partners with them. And so you're going to need local venture capital. You're going to certainly need a partnership with Xcel or other utility companies. And the third or fourth thing they said is we need some support, at least from the public sector, in terms of promoting policies that will encourage this. So we're trying to do that small last part here. But it really is going to sink or swim based on the private sector initiative. And I was quite surprised and pleased, actually, with the, again, whether this will come to fruition. We've had similar press conferences and bravado from Detroit. But the fact that the electric car was a little more prominent than in the past may indicate that we could be finally seeing some movement there. And it may be because Renault-Nissan has taken the lead on this and has made such an investment and commitment. So it's really going to come from the private sector, but we can do our part in making sure that Minnesota's on the map and open for business to this emerging industry.
I want to make sure that we get time for your other testifiers. So, Ms. Ruckel, do you have comments you'd like to add?
I'm here simply for questions.
Thank you very much. Representative Atkins, do you have a question?
I do, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the chance. And I assume, Representative Gunther, you figured out that the 40-amp will work on your golf cart? Is that what you want to check on?
A big golf cart.
Yeah, you probably need all 40 amps. My question is on the 40 amps, is aside from the fact that it should work on Representative Gunther's golf cart so you can tool back and forth, but the bill requires that the raceways for all multifamily buildings and for all parking facilities. It also requires the actual connection from the junction box at the existing panel to a location in the garage in every single family home that's built. There's just a little bit of a, pardon the pun here, unintended, but the disconnect between the number that you pointed out, this might be thousands, Representative Gunther said perhaps tens of thousands of cars that are run on electricity versus every home, every parking spot. Just from a practical perspective, does it make sense to have every single home with that? And I don't know what the cost of that necessarily would be. Or does it make better sense to allow it to be like the multifamily units and the parking facilities, that it's able to accommodate it in the event that the homeowner actually has an electric car? I'm just, right now we've got a decimated building construction industry, and anything that adds to that cost, I'm a little concerned about.
Chair and Representative Atkins, just to clarify, the piece on in the thousands was within the next decade. I think that it would certainly number in the thousands and potentially quite a bit more, depending on many factors, including public and private sector investments. And the piece specifically related to an individual home, this isn't much beyond what we use to plug in our cars to have them warm for our Minnesota winters. So this isn't a huge investment, and I think Representative Hornstein can speak to the fact that the builders have been on board on this piece.
Representative Hornstein?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Atkins, I mean, I wouldn't want to speak for the Builders Association. I don't think they have a position for or against the bill, but we have run the language by, because that is a real concern. It's been identified in an earlier committee. They didn't appear to have a problem with it, and the Mechanical Contractors Association did not as well. And one of the amendments that the committee approved today clarified some of the language around raceways. My understanding is this doesn't go a lot beyond what's existing right now in terms of, regulations and the building code. But it just simply says that we acknowledge this for future infrastructure, that this should be a part of it. One suggestion we had, Mr. Chairman, Representative Atkins, is, maybe you start by setting aside a few spots and in a commercial property, and then see how things go from there. And I'd certainly be open to that. We just, again, want to say that we're taking this seriously. We want to make sure that new infrastructure has the capability to accommodate these new generation electric vehicles. And my understanding is, by and large, it does already.
Representative Atkins. And then just a brief follow-up on the, I assume standardization is the reason why I heard you say absolutely when the question came from the other side about the 40-amp, 240-volt. Is that the whole point? Representative Hornstein referenced cell phones, and we're on 4G now. They call it third generation is what the cell phones we're all using right now, and they're all talking now 4G, whatever the heck that means. I'm curious if you guys are on 2G, 3G, or 4G, but is it always going to be, and I'm going to hold you to this 10 years from now, are we going to be talking about 40 amp, 240 volt, or are we going to be driving hydrogen cars then?
Yeah.
So,
well, Mr. Chair,
Representative Hornstein,
I was kind of the guy that even had trouble with the dry cell battery experiment in third grade. So and computers as well. But all I can say about those numbers is that this is infrastructure 2.0. I mean, cars 2.0. We're going to the next stage. That's what Shai Agassi, the head of Better Place, calls it. And I think that, again, we need to start here. And of course we'll adapt and say government to what's emerging out there. But this does seem to be, again, the standard that industry has suggested to us. And we have had no complaints from, again, mechanical contractors or builders about it.
Representative Atkins, I believe that the chair of the next committee will be able to thoroughly hash through these details.
Trying to do that here, Mr. Chair, so we can make real quick work in the next one.
Sure.
But thank you very much for my members.
Mr. Chair, I mean, if there are some issues with this particular question or concern, I mean, we certainly can work through it with the proper stakeholders in the next week so that those can be allayed.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein. I'd like to remind members we do have additional bills to get to, but it looks like finishes up as quickly as possible. Representative Agnes, did you have a question to this bill?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chairman. And I'm looking at parking facilities here in the language on page 5, 3, unless we deleted that. but I think we still have it. When you look at what's described here, it's all basically all parking facilities, and this has certainly got to affect counties and cities and other government entities out there. But also, in my view, it would have to include DNR at Ella Parking, at all the state parks we have, and those entities, and MnDOT with the rest areas, and certainly, at least I think most of us here give a check to admin for the parking we've got next door here. So, Mr. Chairman, before this goes to Commerce, I understand it's going to Commerce, I'm certain there's going to be a fiscal note on this. There has to be one on this. So I'd like to be able to take a look at the fiscal notes, even though I don't serve on the Commerce Committee. I'd like one sent to me when you get it, Representative Hornstein.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Magnus. Absolutely, and we'll have to make sure that's in place before the next committee.
Further discussion on this bill. Anybody from the audience wish to testify, either for or against? Seeing none, Chair renews his motion that House File 1250 be as amended, be recommended to pass, and be referred to the Committee on Commerce. Further discussion? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails and is re-referred to the Committee on Commerce.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Members, we have three bills left on the agenda, and since two of them are sponsored by members of the committee, we're going to jump ahead on the agenda and take up Representative Seifert's House File 1473.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Seifert, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I'm not sure where this bill goes. It is, essentially, we forgot to add about three or four words in last year's bill. After 1.9, after pre-design, it was supposed to say construct and equip. And unfortunately, that got left out, and I'm not exactly sure what to do with this, but I can explain what it's about, and maybe you can kind of give me an idea where you'd like it to go.
Representative Seifert, the bill was referred to us from the Finance Committee, and I think the appropriate motion, which I will make, is that House File 1473 be recommended to pass and return to the Committee on Finance with a recommended re-referral to the Capital Investment Division.
Sure. Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is a fix to a bill from last year. The $300,000 was already appropriated last year in 2008 with the unfortunate circumstance of the words construct and equip not being put on line 1.9 like it was supposed to, so this is a fix-it bill. Mr. Chair, members, we have a merit center in Marshall. It's an emergency response and industrial training center. Soil borings were done to make sure that we can go forward with a wind safety facility, an ethanol safety facility. As many of you know, Marshall has the largest ethanol plant in Minnesota that is now owned by ADM. It started as a farmer-owned co-op. And we also, in our region of the state, have a lot of wind towers. And what this facility is to do is to train people in safety, both with fire and everything with EMTs and fire departments and also private sector folks. The $300,000 has helped pay for the soil borings relating to the pre-design, but the pre-design construction equipment was not done because of the leaving out of the words construct and equip. The facility right now is ready to put up a shaft and hub for a wind tower, because getting on and off of wind towers is very dangerous, Mr. Chair. They need to be serviced. They need to have people who know what they're doing. And in relationship to that, this is the best facility to be able to do that. We are working in partnership, City of Marshall, with the Minnesota West Community and Technical College system to make sure that people are trained properly. And also a portion of this would be used for a prop for live ethanol burns, because ethanol does burn and explode differently. And being that we have various facilities in southern Minnesota, we believe that it's very important to get this project moving for the safety of the people working both on wind towers and ethanol facilities. And that's why it's before your committee, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Seifert. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Seifert, shows you that the monies that are being allocated or were allocated last session are to construct and equip. How many different entities? You said there's some entities that are involved with this, and I take it to the tech center and so forth, but are there private industry that's involved here also? And what is the timeline for this being built?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, the partnership has been a public-private sector arrangement. ADM has helped with this, Archer's Daniel Midland, which owns the ethanol plant right now in Marshall, the corn plant. The City of Marshall has been involved, Minnesota West Community and Technical College, but we've also had partnerships from the Schwann Food Company because they deal with emergencies relating to our plants, and we also have the little yellow trucks that you're all familiar with that are out on the road. Over 90% of the fleet that Schwann's has does not burn off diesel or gasoline. They are propelled by propane, not by, and I'd encourage the committee to have a hearing sometime on how that works. It burns cleaner, you avoid the spikes in energy prices and the like, but Schwann's has a unique interest in this facility because of the danger sometimes with propane and how it can leak and operate. So we've gotten donations from all of those entities. The land has been purchased and donated. We've gotten enough for in-kind contributions for equipment from the private sector and also for land. So we've exceeded our match for this particular facility. We're ready to go. I believe the time frame is to try to get it this summer, Representative Anderson, if we can get this bill through.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Seifert, so you expect this bill, this building to be up and going by the end of 2010, are you talking constructed and built and ready to go this fall?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson.
Representative Seifert.
The plan for this money is to do the pre-design as an attachment with the facility we already have out there. So the main purpose of this money is for the demonstration project for the wind turbine hub and shaft, and also for the live burn prop, which would be about the size of a semi or two put together, which would be something that they feel can be reused in terms of the spillage of fuel and the unique characteristics that ethanol has as compared to other fuel sources. It would not be used for a standalone training facility. They already have the building out there. The main purpose is the wind turbine shaft is unique to the extent that it is dangerous to get on and off of there. It doesn't cost an immense amount to put up, but we have to pay for it, obviously. And so we're trying to work with the private sector to make sure we can get that up in a timely manner. So. As this committee knows, we're building a record number, mainly represent Falk's district, represent Magnus's district. We want to make sure that people that are working on these for both repair and construction can make sure that we're operating with them in a very safe manner. So it's really not for a standalone building or anything of that nature.
Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Seifert, one question is this necessary, being that the college in Canby does the WinTech program, and the college in Granite Falls currently does the ethanol training program? Are they not adequately covering the safety aspects?
Mr. Chair, Representative Falk, thank you. My understanding and what I've heard is that they plan on partnering with this for the live burn demo. for fire training that is specifically different than what the technical colleges are doing for the small volunteer fire departments to come in and do the live burns that they don't have the capability of in Granite. In some of the training facilities, this is a little more specific than what Canby has. And I had asked the same question because I do know that they have those programs there. And apparently they're working in conjunction with the instructors from those campuses to make sure that this works.
Representative Paul. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Seifert. I know that there is some push to get a utility scale, a commercial scale turbine at Canby College to use as a training tool. And I'm just wondering if maybe there's a way we could work together, because if we're just going to be installing basically a tower with no nacelle or other equipment for generating electricity, maybe we could put that money to use to help fund some of the cost of that machine, which would actually help power the campus, maybe the school, and actually provide the full scale of training and the safety demonstration projects at the college where they actually are training the techs. Maybe it's something we could work on, because they have expressed some interest to me that they would like to see some more resources put at the actual campus.
Mr. Chair, Representative Falk, I'd be happy to do that. This particular, the hub and shaft system is much more reasonably priced if we don't have it hooked up and fit in all the generation lines, but I am interested, and I used to, as you know, represent Canby at one time, and would be happy to work with you on this. Being that this was a previous appropriation, what I would call is an inadvertent mistake that construction equipment was, those two words are just left out in a way, so that's why we're here today.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Seifert, to that point, you know, still being a little bit of a newbie around here, I'm wondering if we're not skipping a step here, that you need to add that pre-design, design, and construct. And I just wonder if Mr. Eliff or Mr. Soderberg might be able to clarify that the soil borings and other pieces traditionally that you described, Representative Seifert, I believe are the pre-design work, but wanting to make sure that we don't have to do this one more time, or that going outside the scope. And that may be more of a question for the Capital Investment Committee, or we can...
Mr. Chair, I honestly don't have a good answer for Representative Kalin on the design, the word design. My understanding is that the construct and equip part is what the imperative is. I'm not sure if they need to do design or if they can just fast forward it, but that might be a better question for Capital Investment to ponder. I know that the Department of whatever finance is now called, Minnesota Management and Budget, would not release the money with the language the way it was here.
Representative Seifert, I think it's true that would be the issue for Capital Investment, but perhaps Mr. Soderberg could shed some light on that for us in advance of going to Capital Investment. I don't want to put you on the spot, but...
But
he will.
Mr. Chairman and members, I really can't have nothing to add. I'm not really sure what the status of the project is, because if they're at the pre-design stage, or if that hasn't been done, I think it'd be appropriate to it. But I just don't know what the status of the project is.
Well, Representative Seifert, I think it's a good suggestion to make sure you understand what the situation is with that, because that is language that we've typically seen in bills like this. I mean, don't want to take one step forward and two steps backward on this.
I agree, Mr. Chair. I'm tempted to just have the committee put design before the word construct, comma, just to be safe, because I don't think it would hurt anything. But it's up to you if you want to do it, or if you want to leave it up to Capital Investment.
Well, I think since it is simply one word, it would probably be best left to Capital Investment, and feel confident that we know what we're talking about in that regard. Is there any further discussion to this bill? Seeing none, the chair will renew his motion that House File 1473 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance, with further recommendation that it be referred to the Committee on Capital Investment. All those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion prevails. Bill is passed through finance. Representative Bly.
Thank you.
Chair and committee, I'd like to move my bill House file number 214 to be passed and referred to finance to go to education, K-12 education, I believe.
Very well, Representative Bly, the bill is before us. You have an amendment.
I do have an amendment.
Stop that before we
yes.
consider the bill.
Yes, so I'd like to move Amendment A1, 214A1. And essentially what this amendment does is to remove the reference to the exemption from the production tax. And when I initially was brought the bill by the various schools, they were not interested in that exemption, and I think the reviser made it as a suggestion. I carried this bill at the end of the session last year as well, and the same situation occurred. And so I think the reviser, when I asked him to redraft it, just forgot that I had not wanted that in there. But so that's what I'm hoping to do.
Any further discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of its adoption, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The amendment is adopted. Representative Bly, to your bill.
Yes, thank you.
Apparently consists now of Section 1.
That's correct. What this bill does is it modifies the statute authorizing school districts to own wind projects by exclusively providing the districts can also join together to own a project jointly. And they may join in a limited partnership or a member of a limited liability or LLC or as a shareholder in a corporation, whatever type of business organization is chosen in the partnership. And so that's essentially what I would like to move forward. There are some districts, and I think I provided some testimony that was given when the bill was introduced in the Senate. And I think the last page shows the districts that are in this proposed partnership.
Representative Bly, it's my understanding that this bill has moved in the Senate, that an amendment has been adopted regarding service territories. Can you
thank you for bringing that up, Chair. Yes. The issue was not brought to me in time to have the amendment drafted. It's my intent to talk with the utilities who have that concern and work that out with them before we go to education so I can introduce the amendment there.
Is there any discussion to the bill as amended? Representative Beard.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bly, I'm quickly trying to read Mr. Suss's comments here about what's going on and noticing that your bill apparently, and I'm going to ask you to explain, maybe comment and explain a little bit, allows more than one school board to get together in a joint partnership. But those of you who were here last term will remember when we put some of this into play, I raised a concern. It's still a concern of mine. One is that we act like renewable energy has no downside risk. And I think we can see what's happening with the friends in the ethanol industry and see that although there are times when you are profitable, there are times when it is dismally unprofitable. I think we have a government in the business of running school districts where we tax the taxpayers and ask them for permission to do things and stand for their approval. And all of a sudden now we're going to allow certain school districts to go into the energy generation business, which has risks attached to it, which is, folks, why we have highly regulated industries and we have stockholders and we have cooperative members and we have people that put up a great deal of capital and attempt to run a profitable business. And now we're going to encourage schools to get into a business that, like it or not, has downside risk. What in your bill would blunt the downside risk to a district that's say got several hundred students is struggling to hang on like some of our dear friends in the particularly rural part of the state, and now they're going to be part of a partnership that's going to go into the wind business? What happens if things go downhill to become unprofitable? How do we protect those districts from really going in the tank or putting the taxpayers on the hook.
Representative Bly.
In the testimony that Superintendent Richardson makes, he does address some of that concern, and in fact, the Northfield School District some years ago was looking at purchasing their own turbine, and this was an issue that did come forward for them as well, wondering about the risk. And I think Superintendent Richardson does describe this as a better model, in the sense that it there is some protection in being in a partnership. And the other thing that they talk about is that it isn't only necessarily to have some profit from this venture, but initially, when one of the reasons that the Northfield District was interested in it was the educational part of this, and that it also does say, in a sense, the district's making a statement about their commitment also to renewable energy.
Representative Beard. Mr. Chairman, thank you. And that's a distinction I'm glad you raised, Representative Bly. To have a district take on an expensive project, or any kind of project, for a stated purpose, educational, or in the case of like the Johnson Controls Program, which I believe, Mr. Chairman, we've had some of that described here on some of the programs they run, where they'll come into a district and a guarantee to cut your energy costs or any particular cost for a share of the savings, which is a marvelous business model. They're on the hook, however, if they don't materialize. To have those kind of things happen, a school district put up a wind generator and it reduces their energy, that's one thing. But as I read your bill, it seems like we're encouraging or enabling school districts to actually get into the generation business and do it for a profit motive. And I think I'm reading it that way. Correct me if I'm wrong. And I think, members, that's an entirely different ball of wax than doing it for an educational purpose or doing it for to reduce your costs.
Representative Block?
I am not certain I have all the details about how the particular partnership is going to work. I know that they're not expecting a huge profit from because of the way it's structured. But I think that there are some, that from what I understand, there are some educational benefits for being involved in this partnership and the results of seeing that work. So I guess I'm not sure I can answer your question completely.
Perhaps the other language in the bill does answer to some extent, Representative Beard. I mean, the bill is amending a section that's already in law that says that any individual school district can do this.
Yes.
So in that regard, I would guess that they're combining the risk would actually be less risky than what we're providing for currently.
Exactly. You remember last year I wailed about this, and I was against it then. I'm against it now, but we kind of spread the against it around over more districts, so I guess it's...
Year by year, you'll be a little less against it.
Yeah, a little less against it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it does say in the bill that was passed before, it's the maximum size would be 3.3 megawatts, so it wouldn't be that. So I think that limits the extent of the size of the wind farm to whoever the joint entities would be could put up.
Yes, thank you. Representative Welty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Bly, I do remember having this discussion. And so could you, last year, and could you remind me what happened to your bill last year?
Representative Bly.
Thank you, Chair, and Representative Welty. Last year, I don't think the bill came before the Energy Committee last year. It went directly to K-12. It was incorporated into their the finance bill, and I think was either line item vetoed or didn't make it into the conference committee. I can't remember exactly the result. I had thought that it had made its way through, but discovered later on that it did not.
Further discussion, Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Bly, I can't remember if this was part of the discussion last year with the bill or in 2007, but I just wanted to pass along to you as part of the Green Jobs Task Force, we had a lot of discussion about the role of school districts and school funding and renewable revenue from renewable projects in this new model, potentially, where Representative Magnus's schools could benefit greatly because they're in a windy part of the state, and Representative Purcell's might not because there's not as much wind, except for when we hold town hall meetings up in Bemidji. And so one of the things that we were able to get real broad consensus on, I think that it was even a consensus of the Green Jobs Task Force, was to support removing barriers to what your bill does, to renewable generation for our schools, provided that we allow school districts to get to zero on their energy bills, but not necessarily beyond, so they can generate revenue to offset their utility, local utility costs, and then, as you and I have discussed earlier today, to use the excess resource, excess revenue, to either be a revolving loan fund to fund the next layer of projects, or to go into a more general fund allocation for our schools. So not serving on the Education Committee, I just wanted to impress on you that I think that may be one way to ensure that we get consensus and support on a to get this into law. My school district is one of the 14 that has been engaged with Johnson Controls on this project, and I would like to see it happen for them.
Further discussion? Representative Falk.
Just off of the comment that to what Representative McCallum said, PURPA would still apply to, you would be able to be compensated at the retail, or at the avoided cost rate through federal law.
Yeah, any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Bly renews his motion that House File 214 as amended be recommended to pass and return to Committee on Finance with a further recommendation that it be re-referred to the K-12 Finance Division. All those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Bill is passed to Finance. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I would like to move House File 1553. I believe it's got a couple of stops here, but perhaps you have the pertinent information, Mr. Chair.
Representative Bly, I think the motion would be that the bill be recommended to pass, return to Finance, and re-refer to Capital Investment.
Thank you.
So I assume that is your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just give an overview of the bill here, and then I do have a testifier, Ms. Ann Hunt, with the City of St. Paul. This bill, as I am undertaken to understand, has come out of a recommendation from the Green Energy Task Force, and we are simply setting up a grant program for local government renewable energy, and this program would be put through the Commerce Department of Commerce here at the state, yeah. And we'd set up grant programs with, and I, you know, we had penciled in some numbers here, but certainly open to suggestion on numbers, but perhaps something like $10 million in bonding, and then projects up to maybe $500,000 or so. But I'm certainly open to suggestion on this, and with that, I'll try and take questions here, but I think if you'd allow Ms. Hunt to talk about what they anticipate might be done with this at St. Paul, it might be instructive.
Certainly, Ms. Hunt.
Representative Hilke, members of the committee, I'm Ann Hunt. I am the Environmental Policy Advisor for Mayor Chris Coleman in St. Paul. I thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I'm here today to express support for House File 1553. Mayor Chris Coleman, as you may know, is committed to making St. Paul our capital city, the most livable city in America. We've really been trying to take proactive steps in St. Paul to protect our air, water, and urban landscape. Some of the things that we've been doing since the mayor took office in January of 2006 is to really try to look at, have a comprehensive look at how we can reduce our CO2 emissions and further reduce our energy bills. The city of St. Paul spends about $11 million a year on electricity, natural gas, and fuel. So we're really, really motivated to try to reduce those things. So we've been working with Xcel Energy, our major utility in St. Paul, and a number of partners like Center for Energy and the Environment and others to do recommissioning studies of our current public buildings, like our fire stations, our rec centers. Right now we're currently working on doing some energy recommissioning studies of the 15 parking ramps that the city owns. We've invested, the mayor has pledged to self-finance about $1 million for these energy conservation programs, but so far we have, you know, more than $3 or $4 million worth of improvements that need to be done. We're trying to do everything that pays for itself in a 10-year payback or less. We've also been trying to build our new buildings smarter. So while we're doing the retrofitting of our existing buildings, we're trying to do our new buildings smarter. We just opened the new Western District Police Station. It's across the street from the Target Center, or the Target University in Hamlin. That is a LEED Gold building, Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design. It got the gold standard. It uses about half the energy that a typical building its size would use. It's one of the first police stations in this region, you know, in the Midwest, to be LEED Gold. We're also doing a new fire station, so we're, but we also think that we'll be really very, very energy efficient. But we also want to try to look at the opportunities to put renewable energy on some of our public buildings. The City of St. Paul with the City of Minneapolis secured a $200,000 Department of Energy grant to really look at what are the barriers to jumpstarting solar in the Midwest. What are the regulatory, permitting, legislative, you know, financing barriers to doing that. We're going to be this summer doing, with the help of Department of Energy's Tiger teams, doing some site assessments of our existing buildings to look at where are the opportunities for really putting solar. And I'll have an opportunity, I hope, at one of the next upcoming committee meetings to talk a little bit more in depth of solar. But we'll be positioned to be able to take advantage of a fund like this, whether it's appropriate on our parking ramps, for example. If we combine doing some energy efficiency with Xcel and Center for Energy and the Environment, is that going to be a good place to also then potentially locate some solar photovoltaic systems? We'd also probably look at the opportunity to put plug-in hybrid car or stations as well on some of those parking ramps in downtown St. Paul. So again, I just wanted to express my support, the city's support for this initiative. It's really important for the environment and the economic health of the capital city of St. Paul. So thank you very much.
Any questions for Representative Purcell, who testifies, Representative Anderson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Either to the testifier or to Representative Purcell. On page 1, line 1.20, talks about the commissioner shall determine technical standards for renewable energy systems. Can you tell me what those technical standards are going to be?
I don't know that I can anticipate that. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson. I don't know that I could anticipate that at this time.
What about the testifier, Mr. Chair?
Ms. Hunt?
Well, I think that would be some of the things we would be trying to work, Representative Hilke, Chairman Hilke, and members. For example, we've worked with, on retrofitting our buildings, we work with Xcel and Xcel's Energy Design Assistance Program, which brings in technical experts from the white groups and other things to analyze the various technical options that are appropriate for a building. And then with that, you look at what are going to be the costs of doing those things, what are the anticipated energy savings and things. So I don't know if we know specifically what they would be at this point.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Purcell, you talked about, you said $10 million or thereabouts. Where did you get that number from?
I had a big hat, so, Mr. Chair, Representative, I had a big hat and
threw that out.
I hope I get that much if I ask for it, too, Mr. Chair.
Appreciate your support, Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, another question.
Representative Anderson.
On page 2, 2.9, the total life cycle energy use. What's the definition for that? Mr. Purcell, Representative Purcell.
Representative Purcell. Let me read it real quick.
Line
2.9. Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, you know, depending on the energy, alternative energy being utilized, I think that could vary, and I'd feel most comfortable if I got back to you on that, but I would perhaps review one of... Have something for that, Ann, or
it looks like
Representative Kalen perhaps had some light on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe Representative Anderson is your question, right? The total life cycle cost is actually a total life cycle reduction, sort of return on investment measure, but the total life cycle cost is actually now a term of art that all federal buildings, I believe, certainly all federal buildings within the Department of Transportation purview have to meet. So it's a term of art that's defined in the federal code thanks to the need to meet Representative Chairman Overstar's 2007, I believe, transportation bill.
So, Mr. Chair, Representative Keelan,
Representative Anderson.
Is there a definition? I mean, have you seen the definition?
Representative Kalen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I have seen the definition. I can make sure that with staff's help that we track that down and distribute it to you and to the committee.
Thank you.
Mr. Elif, can you shed a little light on this for Representative Anderson?
Only to say, Mr. Chair, that I'm not aware of any definition in state statute of this term, but I think it's one of those things that we kind of understand the basics, and it wouldn't be a bad idea to put a definition in here, referencing that federal definition that Representative Kalen mentioned.
Thank you. Further discussion. Representative Beers.
Mr. Chair, and something that's come up here as we've been moving through these bills today is I see this number, 3.9 megawatts. It seems to have some special significance when we're sizing wind projects. Just while you're looking this up and educating the committee, I think it would be good for all of us to know where that number came from and why we've fixated on and put it in law.
Mr. Hill, if you want to take a crack at that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My recollection is that this one was not pulled out of a hat, my
7 3/4 we didn't know.
Exactly right. My recollection is at the time, the first time I remember seeing that number was in the schools bill, the wind bill that we passed, I believe back in 2005 or 2006. And my understanding at the time was that 1.65 megawatt turbines were the average size times 2 gauge of 3.3. As you mentioned, that's a number that could change in the future as turbines become more efficient.
Might refer to only one at that point. Further discussion. Seeing none, Representative Purcell, you want to renew your motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would renew my motion to pass House File 1553 and to the aforementioned committee to which it will be referred.
So seeing finance with a re-referral to capital investment.
Thank you again, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Purcell. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Bill is passed. Finance. Members, we have a very ambitious agenda for Wednesday. And to the end of getting through that agenda on Wednesday,
Mr. Pomeroy has checked schedules, and I believe that we're safe in starting our meeting on Wednesday immediately after session, which hopefully would be somewhat sooner than 2:45. So it is our intention to do that tentatively at 1 o'clock or as close to after session as possible on Wednesday. And if we do not get through in this room, if we do not get through the agenda, then we'll have to think about having additional meetings later in the week. But hopefully we can manage it by that means. So, with that, the meeting is adjourned.